When I was working at Accenture, they finally had to put a team of 18 people to replace me.
Wow.
And India's a happening place now. You know, like you can build world-class businesses and you don't feel like, you know, you can only execute it from the West. You can do everything from India now. Even people ask us, our structure is, we have only 10 people in London. The entire team is based out of India. If you have money, India is the best place to live. You get, you know, 5 maids and a driver and everything is taken care of. In the West, you can't do that. In India, if I think, you know, somebody gives me a choice, you have exactly same career prospects and what you can do in one place versus the other. And whether you want to take Bangalore or Coimbatore, I will take Coimbatore at current moment.
Hi, this is Siddharth Ahluwalia and welcome to The Neon Show. Today's guest bootstrapped his company from one customer in Hong Kong to thousands, including Shell, Boeing and IKEA. He dreams of creating a Silicon Valley in Coimbatore and help build the city's first SaaS unicorn in the process. We welcome Koi.co's founder Saruna Kumar to The Neon Show. I would also like to thank our sponsors, Prime Venture Partners, for sponsoring The Neon Show. Hope you enjoy it. Saruna, welcome to The Neon Show. So excited to have you here.
Yeah, thank you very much, Siddharth. I'm a really big fan of your podcast, all the way from 100X Entrepreneurs. I've been watching for a long time. In fact, like, you know, some of the things I've, yours is a bit longer format, but still I enjoy it. Like, you know, on the weekends, I typically sit and watch some of the episodes. And that's how I got connected to you, and I'm really delighted to be here. You know, I didn't know, like, you know, I'll be sitting here and speaking to you.
Thank you so much.
You know, like, thank you very much.
Traveling especially to Bangalore for the podcast, and, you know, you and I have shared a special relationship. I've interacted with you many times now, and you're also now an investor in Neon Fund. So glad to bring, you know, somebody who has known Neon more personally, as well. Sarna, I would love to start with your childhood, right? What are the earliest childhood memories that have shaped become who you are today?
Yeah, sure. I keep telling this story because I come from a typical middle class family in India. So I'm the, I got two siblings, two brothers, and I'm the eldest one. And right from my young age, like, my father runs a small shop in the native town called.
Does he still run that?
No, he's retired now. But when we were younger, like, so I used to run a small shop.
And town called?
It's called Mettupalayam.
Okay.
It's actually 30 kilometers away from Coimbatore. But if you want to visit Ooty, then you need to cross Mettupalayam, because it's the foothills of Ooty is this town. It's a small town, Mettupalayam. So that is where I've been grown up. My dad's business is very simple, you know, like, you might recollect from your younger age, like, picture framing, right? The puja pictures.
We have so many frames here in the office.
You know, the Ganapati and Saraswati and all those pictures. It's a very small business. That's it. And, right from when I was in 12 or something, I need to get involved in the business, because, my father was exploring other, opportunities. And you don't have accounts and anything, like you can't leave there, just the employees to, because they can just sell something and pocket the money because you won't have any trace of.
And you were doing it after school?
After school, you know, like that's a,
my regular. 2 p.m., keep your bag in the office, have your lunch at the office and.
No, not that crazy. You know, like normally I'll come back home, my father will be waiting to pick me up.
Okay.
To be honest, I hated that at that age, because you come and you go and play with your friends, right? But that's my regular routine. And that's how I've been grown up. And that continued all the way, you know, like even to my higher education. And even when I went to university, I think my dad, the criteria is something like, you know, I will be able to come back and can carry on in the business side. Today, you know, I can relate all those learnings, whatever you had learned during that period is transforming today. One of the thing is exposure to dealing with money at a young age, because the principles are same, only the numbers are different.
Or the scale is different.
The scale is different, right? So I feel like, you know, even today, like I tell people, like, you know, it's very important to teach kids at a very younger age. If you're an entrepreneur, you know, in our family, like, I got two boys, and we all the time, you know, we talk about everything. Probably my boys are pretty shaped up, I will say, like they know what are the marketing challenges and people challenges and everything. So that contributed significantly. So one more example is, so we also sell window glasses, you know, like when you construct a new home, you need the glasses for the windows, right? So we were also selling that. So for that, the way we used to get business is you need to pay commission to carpenters.
Yeah.
So only then they will bring the business to you. And that is the same, like what we call partnership model now, like at scale, like, you know, like exactly same. What are the nuances? You know, how do you deal with them? How do you make them happy? Yeah. All those principles, it applies. So I think maybe, you know, like without even I realizing that younger age exposing to business contributed significantly to where we are today. You know, maybe, you know, just the bootstrap business and very frugal. No, I won't say very frugal. Still, we invest and grow at the same time. But handling money is one of the biggest learnings from that. Yeah.
Good. The other thing that I want to discuss with you is you have been away from India almost 22 years now.
It's actually 50-50 now. I am 46. So I lived first 23 years in India and second 23 years in London.
Yeah. And your first job in London was Fidelity?
No. The first job was a Mumbai-based Indian body shopping company. So that's how I got the job. I was with them only for 1 year. And then the place where they deployed me, the client, they basically bought me out. I think that's what happened. And it was a company called March First, which was an American company, but later bought by Logica and then CGI. That was my first job. And then I joined Accenture after that. To 2010, I think, and small stint at Microsoft, so 4 companies in 10 years.
Well, I believe you always wanted to start up your own business, right? So even at Fidelity, you were doing first 5 days a week, then you reduced it to 4 days, and then 3 days, and then finally you quit.
Correct. Correct. Yeah, I won't say like, you know, like whether it was very strong aspiration to go and start, whether I don't know whether that was there. But right from the young age, I was always doing one thing or the other. Even 97 something, like, you know, I was working as a trainer in one of the institutions similar to Aptech kind of thing.
NIIT and all these.
Yeah, NIIT, Aptech. This was a local institute.
Back when it was so big, right? Because everybody wanted
to
learn computers.
Every street will have one training institute, right?
Yes.
So I was working for a company called Nuva Systems in Coimbatore. And even that time I was trying to build a training software to sell to. I was always doing bits and pieces. But this one, you know, I saw an opportunity. Like we'll probably talk about it, the first product, how the idea came. And then I saw the idea. And then initially I was working only on the weekends for some time. Then I thought probably I can take it a bit more serious. And then I went to my manager and I said, the thing is, you know, even today, like if you have a really good talent, right, like you want to preserve them one way or the other. And at that point, I always put 100%, you know, like it will be, when I was working at Accenture, like they finally had to put a team of 18 people to replace me.
Wow.
Like, you know, slow, because you're so passionate about the problem space and even there won't be any specification or anything. You'll go build so many things to help the people out there. And eventually the thing I was building something like, it's called a simulator, Accenture won this biggest contract for healthcare in UK. So they are connecting every single doctors and hospitals together.
Yeah.
And there are so many vendors involved, like healthcare vendors. And they will come and deploy something and that will break the core system. And every time there's a lot of delay in testing and everything. So I built a simulator for all these external vendors. I just started as a hobby thing. You know, nobody asked me to do it. I just started in the weekends and I was just doing it. And gradually that became like one of the core things for the entire project. That's like a few billion dollar worth of a project. And finally, Accenture had to put like 18, 20 people to replace me. A similar thing happened, and the reason I was telling is Fidelity, you know, same I work, I never, you know, worried about work. I never felt like work, you know, I really enjoyed it. I did something. And then you're adding so much value to them. And when I proposed, you know, like, okay, I want to do that, they're very flexible. And then I reduced it gradually, 4 days and 3 days. And I did it for like 6 or 8 months. And that is how I built the V1 of the product. Yeah.
So right now your boys are 13 and 16.
The 3 years difference, 16 and 13 now.
And properly settled in London. And you come back to India more and more often, right? So do you feel that now the expats that have moved outside India, there's a feeling of, I want to come back to India? Because what India lacked 20 years ago, 23 years ago when you moved out, it has made up for that.
I think it's a kind of mixed sentiments for me. Like what I really wanted to do is moving forward. Once the boys, you know, maybe another few years, they will go to university and, you know, we have free time to decide how you wanted to do it. I think that both countries got its own pros and cons. There are certain things you really enjoy in India and certain things you enjoy in the West. So we probably will settle down more like, you know, 6 months here, 6 months there, or like even depending on the boys, they really want to go to US for the studies, then probably we will shuttle between three different countries. But definitely, you know, like a lot of things improved in the last 20 years, at least from the opportunity side, definitely no doubt. You know, India is a happening place now, you know, like you can build world-class businesses and you can, that side 100%, you know, like you really, feel like, you know, you can only execute it from the West. You can do everything from India now. Even people ask us, our structure is, we have only 10 people in London. The entire team is based out of India. You know, sometimes people only use the engineering talent from India and all other GTM teams will be out of somewhere else. But in our case, everything is, we invest and we mentor and it's all can be doable in India. On that aspect, definitely India is a better place now. Yeah.
And what changes in infrastructure that you have seen in India in the last 20 years? Because India shining has been a mantra for the last 30, 40 years. But can you share some concrete examples on like why India is shining right now?
The one thing is talent, definitely. I think we need to thank all these consulting firms like Infosys and TCS and Wipro's. What they've done in the last 20, 30 years is what the talent pool, what we are seeing now. It's a generation, right? Like, so 20 years ago, you didn't have it. Like people were just getting into IT and then they just learning along. But today, all the, you know, they, all kind of experiences are there. They got potential to build any world-class product that definitely, you know, like paid a significant, today, in fact, India became a powerhouse for talent for the entire world, right? So that is definitely is a positive side. And also the infrastructure side, at least the IT infrastructure, like, you know, you can get pretty much everything like high-speed internet and those. It even though it looks trivial, but they are the pillars, right? Today, 4G and probably, I don't know whether 5G is available, you know, 4Gs and 5Gs are available. You're connected all the time. The tech side, you know, like everything is happening definitely on that aspect, you know, like a lot of improvements in the last 20 years.
But people also blame Infosys, TCS, Wipro for creating low-cost IT wages, low-cost slavery, right? Because I graduated in 2011. My first job was in Amdocs. The TCS came to my campus with 3 lakh rupees of annual offer. Amdocs was paying 4.2, so I decided to join Amdocs. And even today, TCS Infosys pay to freshers who are 22 to 24 year old, 3 lakh rupees per annum.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know about the fact, but maybe, you know, like I don't know whether the 3 lakhs is applicable for across the spectrum or it could be, you
for
know,
any fresher that they're taken.
Okay. So that's interesting. But I don't know how they can compete, you know, like if you want a cream of the cream, right?
They don't want cream.
Okay. Yeah. I think that is their business model, right? It's like McDonald's, you know, you appreciate the McDonald's business. The entire business model is like that. You know, like, okay, they are only driven by student and they don't want to pay. It's a it's a saying in the West, right? Do you want to work for a McDonald's salary? Yeah. Like, because it's, they always, you know, $10, whatever the national minimum wage set by the government is what you will get on McDonald's. And that is the business model, what they developed and mastered under this and scaled. Maybe the TCS Infosys, that is, and we know, like, you know, like, I don't want to name the company, like, it's a very famous company in Coimbatore. The accounts department, they have a ceiling, you know, like, I think, 5 lakhs or 4 lakhs or something, like, that's it. You, once you grow gradually, I think they will start very low, like 2 lakhs or something. And then once they hit 4 lakhs, you have an option either to continue at that or exit, because they will start again from 2 lakhs and slowly build it up. So we take people from there at, maybe from 4 to 6 lakhs, and then they, here we don't have, like, you know, like, they can grow all the way 12, 15 lakhs over a period of time. And maybe that's the business model of them. So I think it's very difficult to generalize, but, you know, like, but at the same time, sure, you know, like, these companies build great talent as well. You know, even to provide, okay, let's leave this salary part, right? But once you have an infrastructure, like, you know, your laptop and software and access to internet, and then that is invaluable. Like, you know, like, you probably won't get it. Yeah. So I think in that aspect, I'm pretty sure, like, they are the starting point for a lot of people who are building stuff now, right? These are only very few product companies. And so all the product founders, if you look at it, if you go all the way back, they would have worked in one of those companies at some point.
So you are right. We can compare them to the McDonald's of the West. What McDonald's did to the workforce, and why I think West has so much ethics in their workforce, right? We see, because the people, 15-year-old, 14-year-old, start working in McDonald's really early in their life.
That's
and
right.
Even while doing their college, they try to earn working at McDonald's, Starbucks.
Correct.
So they are building the talent factory for India.
No, that's right. You know, even they might hire somebody at 3 lakhs, but today's market, I don't know how they can compete. You know, if somebody is really good, they won't stick around for more, right? You know, like, within a year, they will find something. As long as the drive is there, they will fly.
And they don't want to focus. It was a joke in college, in our college, I believe many other colleges, that they used to come in trucks to hire.
Yeah. No, I think the different slabs, right? Like, if you go to top colleges, like, the tier one will be Amazon's and Microsoft paying, like, you know, 25 lakhs for the intern, and then the tier two comes at below, and we are actually going up and up. The goal is, you know, we want to go as high as possible, financially possible, because I personally believe quality matters. There are, you know, it's much more easier if you got a 10x guy, you know, like, rather than putting 10, even 5 people to do that job.
Yeah.
You know, like, it things, everything is simple when you have a 10x guy. Even internally, I keep telling people, as WhatsApp as an example, because WhatsApp, when it was acquired by Facebook for 19 billion, there were only 50 people, you know, so you really don't need a lot of people. Even today, like, people ask me, are you going to be like 600 people? And no, that's not the goal. You know, like, we wanted to be 300 and get to 5x the revenue.
I think that is true for product companies, right? Because customer pays you for the product, not for people.
Correct.
But in services company, the arbitrage is the key. They are paying us, say, a guy $20 an hour, and they are charging $200 per hour for American.
No, absolutely. I think that is where, you know, we can't really compare, you know, like, because their revenue model is based on headcount.
Yeah.
You know, like, how the cheapest they can get, and then add a markup and what they can do. Because you can't really compare against a product and service business, because this is where, you know, it's very important to understand the business model, because McDonald's is very successful. Nobody is complaining, because that is their business model. It's working. And maybe TCS Infosys, that is the business model, and that's working. They'll have multiple layers, and at the bottom layer, they're happy with that. You know, imagine paying 3 lakhs and paying $200 a day or something. It's a huge.
Yeah.
Their revenue is 27 billion or something.
Yes. So that's the arbitrage. So a person would get, let's say, $200 per an hour. So for a 10 hours of a normal workforce person, they are able to make $2,000 per day. What even they don't pay in a month.
Correct. Correct.
So I think, but there's no doubt that they have built India as a talent pool, right? Because India has always been an aspirational country.
Yeah.
And if we go back to our roots, right, we have been one of the most hardworking people. That's why we see, right, all the US big Amazon, except Amazon, Microsoft, SAP, everywhere there's an Indian CEO.
Yeah.
It's just not the Indian CEOs, right? Because CEOs are not created magically out of thin air.
Absolutely. Yeah.
These are the Indians who slogged for 20 years at various leadership positions in that company, proved their mettle across, proved their ability to work with different cultures.
Sure.
And then became the CEO. So I think a lot of factors combined, right? In the West, Indians have become the top leadership talent. Earlier, it was a mix of American and Chinese, and it's now being replaced by Indians. And the second is that the ground level talent is getting created here.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
In India. Earlier, one of the other things that I wanted to discuss with you, 20 years ago, for all aspirational folks, all the hardworking folks, the best ticket for a good life was do your bachelor's here, apply for master's outside India, and aim for that better life. Is it still true today?
I don't think so, because it's most of them are more like economic migrants, right? Like you didn't have opportunities here for the skill set what you have built up, and you had a better life outside. But today, the salaries are on par, really. You know, like the top you go, like in fact, your saving potential will be much, much higher in India than in the West. Because in the West, it is kind of saturated. Apart from very few roles, even UK, like still 100K is a very good salary. £100,000 is a reasonably good salary. And the top guys, maybe, you know, 150, 160, something like that. And in India, it's 1 crore become normal, right? Like even a mid-manager and at leadership level, it become normal. Here, okay, I don't know Bangalore, but in tier 2 cities, you can get a high-end flat for 20,000 rupees rent or something like that, 20,000. So the savings potential is quite huge. And also the lifestyle, the quality of life is also much higher in India. If you have money, India is the best place to live. You get, you know, 5 maids and a driver and everything is taken care of. In the West, you can't do that. You know, like even when you're earning that kind of money, you still need to vacuum your house and, you know, all those things, the challenges are there. So definitely, people are now probably thinking that's not the only route. Like before, like, okay, I need to, that's the playbook people used to do, right? Engineering and then whatever GRE, TOEFL and then one quick MS and then settle down in US, but now definitely the opportunities are there and you can be here. Okay, there are few India specific downsides like traffic and the other things, but other than that, I feel the quality of life is much better here.
So if a company like Kowei existed in Coimbatore 23 years ago, you wouldn't have moved out of India?
That is our pitch now, you know, like, okay, we all moved out of Coimbatore because nobody created that opportunity. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem. You know, because if you look at it, Coimbatore got some of the top colleges in the country.
Yeah.
I think the PhDs and GCSEs.
It has 50-60 colleges, right?
Yes, some 60-70 colleges and some of them will come under the top 10 colleges in the country. So all those talent, you know, like, once they're done, you know, like they didn't have a choice. Either they need to move out to Bangalore or even Chennai is only recently it's improving. Like otherwise, even Chennai
has become the SaaS capital for India.
Yeah, now it became a SaaS capital. You know, like I think you know, like people definitely to answer your original question, I would have stayed in Coimbatore because at that age, it's a very hard decision to move out of your hometown because, you know, you have a lot of memories, you build up your friendship, you have network, everything. And that at that young age, you're breaking everything. And then all of a sudden you're going. For me, at age of 22, I went to London.
To study?
No, straight work.
Okay.
You know, like we can talk about that. Friday finished my exam. Monday morning, I was supposed to join in London.
And how did that happen? Would love to know that, right? How did you got an opportunity to work?
Because the way I did my studies was in 94 to 97, I did my BSc in electronics, the full-time college.
From Coimbatore?
In Coimbatore. And 97 to 2000, I did my MCA in correspondence, not college. And at the same time, I was working for a company out of Coimbatore. So by 2000, you know, even though I was just graduating my master's MCA, I got 3 years experience. And since I was very passionate about computers and maybe I would have had like, you know, like 7 years worth of experience to the outside world in the amount of learnings you had in the 3 years. Just so you know, that time it was a peak .com and Y2K was also there, but I got more on the .com side and I had an interview and I cleared it and then straight I got a job to join in London.
So you said Friday you got a job and Monday you were supposed to be.
No, I got the job earlier. I gave my exams and then Friday I gave my
MCA exams.
MCA exams. I don't even know the results. And weekend I flew to London. Yeah, I say it's a bit fortunate thing happened. I think there's a lot of good things happened. We discussed about the young childhood, so that helped played a significant part. And going to London at a young age, also because the exposure, right? Like at that time, when you look at 20 years ago, the exposure in India was very minimal. You know, even if you come to Bangalore, that's when Bangalore was picking up with all the foreign investments and companies were coming and setting up and everything. Even then, I don't think the first party work would have come to India. You know, it will be like some back office kind of work was picking up. So moving to London and straight into some very innovative projects. I was working with Microsoft Germany within 6 months. So I was part of a project and it was collaboration with Microsoft Germany and we are doing something. All happened when you were 22 and, you know, that exposure helped significantly as well for you to kickstart much earlier.
So the talent is getting its due worth in India. That's what you are saying, right? So for high salaries, they don't need to move outside.
Salary alone is not a criteria anymore. You know, like if you're good, there are above 1C is pretty normal. Yeah, we have a lot of people.
Then why would still people are like, say, every year 8,000 people in India give up the citizenship, and these are, we are talking about HNIs, people who make, pay good taxes.
I think India still struggles to be, the fair answer is India still struggles with a lot of other factors, right? Like, it's not, you have money, and there's one kind of enjoyment is there with all the mates and quality of life. The other side is still a problem. For example, I like cars and, you know, for me to enjoy those kind of infrastructure, it's not possible here. If people want to travel in Europe or, you know, like, definitely, you know, there's both plus and minus. And it'll come down to individual's preference. I have seen people moving from US and UK back and happily living here. And at the same time, I've seen people who are there and struggling a lot because, have friend circle where, you know, they need to think two times before going to a nice restaurant and, you know, like, so I'll say it'll come down to individual preferences, what you want to do. Like,
got it. And generally, as part of Koi, right, you are trying to create the Silicon Valley inside Coimbatore.
Yeah.
Right. So you have invested, I think, $1.3 million in the office that you created.
Correct.
There. What does life today looks for your employee in a tier 2 city?
When it comes to work and workplace, it will be exactly how you will, your environment will be if you're working in any city in the Bangalore or, you know, we really don't want to take that equation out. We don't want to, When we started this project, like setting up a new office in 2019 is when we made this big decision. Let's go big and do it. One of the first criteria for me is, okay, let's make sure like whatever people get on Bangalore and Hyderabad or whatever, let's replicate that infrastructure here and all the facilities and everything what you will get it. For COVID employees, I'm pretty sure the work life is pretty identical. They won't miss out. Like not only just the nice to have things like office and those kind of things, even work-wise, we do cutting-edge thing and we constantly focus on whether we are doing something innovative. Because I feel, I'm coming from a technical background, I feel that is very important for tech guys. And also that's where all this work-life balance comes in. Like if you really enjoy what you're doing, then everything is taken care of, you know. And all aspects, I feel, that is what we really wanted to replicate in Coimbatore. And also want to set some kind of, you know, like a benchmark like for others too, because it's the 1 mile barrier, right? Once the first guy broke it, then everybody does it. That's also our hope, you know. Once somebody need to do it, right? Okay, let's be that somebody to break it. Yeah.
And I was speaking to one of your leadership person, right? He told me like Sarona is very quiet on the outside but very aggressive while doing work, right? Quietly aggressive, right? You will never raise your voice, right? Folks have never seen you raising your voice. But whatever you tell in a couple of sentences, people would have to write 6 pages to execute it. How is that possible, right? How do you do at that speed?
I think maybe it's just a natural characteristics, I will say. I'm generally, I can openly admit I'm more an introvert person. If you put me in a group of people and if you have like two really extrovert people, then I'll go quiet completely. At the same time, I think that's a natural characteristics of introverts, I guess. They typically listen more and then more action oriented rather than keep talking a lot. Maybe that is what transforming here. I'm very firm on what we need to achieve. And I think the communication is also very important. Like you communicate very clearly within a short sentences, short paragraph. This is what we wanted to execute. And then, you know, like make sure that the other person understands your expectations. And then also keep telling with a lot of the leadership people, like there is a difference between delegation. There's a word for it. It's dumping everything to the person and moving it. I don't do that. You know, I work very closely with that person until they settle down. And my management team, I invested a lot on building that chemistry between us. So I only need to say a couple of sentences. They understand exactly like what's my expectation and then they can do it. But that didn't come magically. You know, the investment was there in the front. Like, you know, I would do one-to-ones every week with them and then go through what they're doing and explain my expectations. So just building that bond and then it becomes easy to do that. Yeah.
But do people face a hard time matching your speed?
I think your founders got a lot of expectations. Yeah. Like when it comes to product, we want everything today. You know, like I'm also realistic as well. You know, like when it comes to tech, since I'm coming from a more tech background, you understand the challenges and you're realistic with that. It's not unreasonable expectations. Like, you know, like whatever it's possible. Yeah.
And do they face possess like a lot of leaders have said, Chat GPT and AI in the US will kill many Indian startups. Is it true?
I don't think it's true because nobody knows the type of applications it can evolve. The last few months, like so many new startups all came out based on this AI and Chat GPT thing. Whether it will kill the entire thing, it's doubtful. There will be impact, and you know any event, there will always be winners and losers. Even we take COVID, right? There's a bunch of companies who scaled exponentially well due to COVID. Zoom is a good example. They went into multi-billion valuation because of COVID. And of course, there's a lot of businesses suffered and died. So any, because that is how the world operates, right? You need to have these kind of events that comes continuously, and that's what resets everything. Otherwise, it can't be stable, or it can be going only up.
The world doesn't grow linear.
Exactly. It can't be linear. You need to have some disruptions happening. And it all comes down to which side of the equation you are when that happens. Whether it will kill Indian is one threat I'm kind of seeing is today, a lot of Indian startups are driven more like a inbound driven. Basically, you know, like the playbook is, general playbook is, you build a product and then you do SEO and then you go generate organic leads and then build inside sales teams and then you close it. That's the most successful playbook. You know, the others are all very, you know, the outbound and ABM things are very lean. So nobody knows what impact will have on the ChatGPT and the organic.
Why is there a relationship between organic, inbound and ChatGPT?
Because if you look at today Google search, right? Google itself, there's a question, you know, will the existence of Google still relevant anymore? You know, like
why is that?
How does the inbound work, right? You, let's say, we got a product document 360 and somebody is going to search for, I'm looking for a knowledge base software. And then our goal is to rank as high as possible.
On the first page of Google.
Not even first page. We want to go on the first three, two. Yeah. Because nobody looks after that third or fourth result. You want to be there. And they click and then they come to your site. And that is where you have like a landing page. Based on their keyword, you wanted to make sure like what they're searching and what your product is matching their requirements. And then the prospects gets interested and then they potentially sign up for your free trial or freemium. Sure. And then that's a playbook. But today they're not coming to you. The traffic stops there, you know, within ChatGPT, it stops. It gives you, it ripped off your answers from your site, right? And then it's actually, it serves there and that user is not coming here. Only when they come here, you can actually do the rest of the journey and conversion. That part, I think it's still, nobody knows what will happen to that part.
So you think, for example, let's say there are a billion Google searches every day.
Yeah.
ChatGPT will reduce it significantly?
The searches may still be there because people need answers for their questions. But the searches coming to your property, you know, that will cut off. If that cuts off.
And why is that? I just want to reiterate again. Why it will cut off?
Because, okay, I'm assuming you're using ChatGPT, right?
Yeah.
You go and you ask questions. You are only living within the ChatGPT window.
Yeah.
You're not coming to, but the answer is actually coming from Document 360's 10 blocks.
Yeah.
It condensed everything. It has taken it and then it's actually giving you all the answers there. If the user is not really, okay, this only small thing you can do is maybe, you know, there is a recommendation by ChatGPT, okay, Document 360 is the best tool for you to do that. That is the only thing. But there actually your conversation stops there. You're not bringing them to this side. So that is what I see it as a challenge.
Another question that I have is, and I keep on wondering about this, right? India's SaaS industry got created in the last 13 years and everybody has benefited from the guardrails and ecosystem that Zoho, Freshworks built in Chennai and now what you are building in Coimbatore, right? And now hopefully we'll see many more startups coming from Coimbatore because you have set an example. But India hasn't produced anything of the scale of Microsoft, Salesforce, right? Even like Amazon Web Services, Google Cloud. Do you think this can be solved in the next 10, 20 years?
Yeah, I think that will happen. Like, you know, the way I look at it is, you know, like if you take it back to 95 and 96 period where there was no IT in India, right? That is when the IT boom started to come. And then all the consulting companies, they captured that wave. Infosys, Wipro, TCS, and all those companies captured the wave. And the 20 years from 2000 to 2010, 12, something like that, they capitalized on that and they all became billion-dollar companies. And the first New York NYSE IPO, Infosys, all these things happened. And that created a talent pool and those talent pool is what now turning into the second generation. And now, rather than going into that consulting route, which is kind of saturated now, and now they're returning it into product companies. And we always, you know, like, there's no concept of real product companies in the last 20 years. Zoho was doing it very quietly, and they cracked it, and probably they didn't, you know, like, expose themselves too much, and then they quietly build that thing. You know, they maybe Sridhar he was able to learn it from US, and he has come back and started it. I think maybe the next 20 years we will see something like the next wave. Like, you know, now we are building products. It's all about now how do you build a large scale products like Salesforce and Microsoft. It will happen. Eventually it will happen because this talent pool, now they understand like how to build product and how to build in, not even build in India, build in one place, but scale it across the globe. They understand the playbook and they're doing it. I think eventually we will see, even today, I think, you know, companies like Freshworks are a good example. Like, you know, like a SaaS company going IPO is a big thing. Like, you know, a product company going IPO is a big thing. Eventually at some point we will see. Today, I think we are competing with everybody, right? And also what I see is the technology side is sorted now. Today, you can build a Salesforce. Building Salesforce is not a problem. Only the GTM part is the problem, because that is what we are lagging. Yeah. Because we didn't learn the playbook in the last 20 years. Yeah. So only technology part we learned. Now people creating the small companies and the GTM motions are learned. And the next step will be like at some point we will see. And also the other thing what I'm seeing is all the tech CEOs of these large firms are all Indian driven, and they all have some softer edges to, you know, build India. And I'm seeing a lot of founders that the investments are, you know, more like not on the money making side, but giving it back to pay it forward. Even SaaS Bhumi, you know, like a lot of motions happening. Then those knowledge will also, you know, I'm pretty sure Satyas and Sundars will be guiding a lot of those companies in India now, you know, like, and eventually we will see something big happening here.
Is it a hope or is it a fact-based statement?
It is fact. I think it will happen. Everything takes time, right? You know, like from where we started, from where we are.
Yeah.
It's a 10, 15 years. It's a long, long-term game. And I think eventually we will see like something bigger. Yeah.
So two questions that, you know, this conversation brings me to. What are the things that Indian founders, especially SaaS founders, need to unlearn to create Salesforce of the world?
Think big. You know, that's a number one thing. Because most of the time, I think a lot of early stage SaaS founders, I think they're very confined, you know, like this is just to build a small product or a small niche and then make a product out of it. If you want to create Salesforces and others, you need to think something like a massive TAM and massive market. That's very hard, you know, like that will come only through experience, because you can't just jump and create a Salesforce immediately, right? And now we are seeing a lot of serial entrepreneurs, you know, they found the first company and then second company. Nutanix is a good example, right? You know, Nutanix, and then now they're building DevRevs. Imagine, yeah, like they're two big ones, and even there's a stepping stone, right? Like they might be doing something, I don't know, DevRev could be Salesforce equivalent or disrupting Salesforce. You never know, right?
And that leads to my second question. The world of software has never been so much crowded as it is. For everything that you need to solve, there are 10 or maybe 100 solutions, right? And there are limited number of enterprise customers, mid-market, that are there. How do you, first, now, when you started Koi, the GTM was simple. You wrote a blog, and whenever customers either found you because there was not too much, you know, you found the gap in Microsoft serverless.
BizTalk servers.
And people, and you were constantly writing, so people who found you, right? And you could say on just on the blog that, hey, this is the problem that is in house all. And I think there's an example also that somebody in Hong Kong said, this is exactly what I want.
Yeah.
But today there would be hundreds of companies writing content, hundreds of companies doing events. How do you differentiate and how do you reach out to those customers?
Yeah, I think one of the challenges, because of all this explosive growth, one of the challenges, building software become almost a commodity now. Anybody can build anything, thanks to all the cloud providers like AWS. And because 15, 20 years ago, if you wanted to host something at this scale, your initial investment will be like a few $100,000. Not $100,000, few $1,000s to get started. But today, even you can start for free to get that, yeah, that kind of scale. But this also created a negative effect on the customer acquisition, because everybody, there's too much noise in the market and it becomes so hard to stand out in the, in the, in the crowd. Having said that, there's still opportunities out there. If you are the one way you can do it is if you're in a very specific niche, that target audience will be very limited. That is exactly how we were able to do the first product, Bistock Server. Bistock 360 is a product for a Microsoft Server product called Bistock Server. There were only 10,000 customers for Microsoft for that particular product. So nobody's actually looking after those 10,000 people. You know, when you find out niches like that, there's basically, when we started writing, when we started helping those companies out there, and we were able to connect and do it. And, people come and ask me for advice, what is the GTM strategy? What can I do? If you look at it, there are not that many. It's only like 7 or 8 channels available for us, and it's all about execution. Rather than just to keep talking about it, I still think, the blogging and stuff will work as long as we have the consistency and the quality of content. People, even though there's a lot of noise, they're still finding quality content is difficult.
As ChatGPT is improving, the bar for quality content has to improve, else you don't know today what content is written by a machine and what is by human. And if somebody wants to produce content, they can produce using ChatGPT. Hundreds of thousands of articles at scale.
No, absolutely. Because today, I started something in LinkedIn called Life of a CEO. I do talk about, I'm very clear. I don't want to put like a generic advice post, because too many, everybody giving advice now, right? Everybody, like all the power, too much noise. Everybody became whether they have done it or not, too much advice in LinkedIn. So yeah. Very particular. Unless otherwise, if I can relate to my personal story, I have done something, this worked, this is what happened, I don't write about it. So then that resonates extremely well with the people, because it's a true story and a true value. As long as you write a quality content, it's still there. All this channel will work depending on, your market, your customer base, your understanding of your customer base, etc. And I don't think, That's all available, basically, the 7 or 8 channels. It's all about how you execute it.
And one thing as a leader, right? I don't know how do you do it, and would love to dive deeper into it. That, do you show your employees only your strengths, or you also show your vulnerabilities?
I'm very transparent with my in the company. Like, I speak to everybody. There is no hierarchy in terms of even interns and everything. And I try to be as transparent as possible. Vulnerability in the sense, there are certain things the founder's journey is always lonely, and you can't disclose everything with everybody. That part is there, always there. Even certain things you can't even talk to your first level management people. Certain things you need to digest yourself. Those things I go outwards, I go find fellow founders or advisors to go with. But internally, I would like to, keep it very as transparent as possible.
I think since, and even before, because you mentioned you were so passionate, you would have 70 or 100 working hours per week throughout your life.
Yeah.
And Mr. Narayan Murthy has said, right, youngsters need to work 70 hours per week. Is it only true for ambitious folks, or is it just true that if India needs to build, that needs to be the norm, like China? Like Jack Ma once quoted very early, like it was, I think, 24/7 something.
Yeah. Yeah, I did read that thing and it's going viral now. I think now everybody is doing some LinkedIn post related to that, right? It depends on how you see it. You know, in my case, I'm sure like, you know, like I'll tell my pattern. I get up at 4:30 in the morning every day. That's my regular routine. 4:30 to 7:30, I do my core work. And then by 9 o'clock, I go to office. And then up to 5, I work and come back. And then I might do bits and pieces here and there. So if you, out of this, how do you classify your hours, right? You know, like, if you look at it, the entire thing as a work, then probably you are doing like a 14 hours a day work.
Even weekends for you.
Yeah, weekends are same, you know, like, because as a founder, you don't switch off, you know, 24/7, you're always thinking. On the other hand, what I believe is, you know, everybody got only like 4 to 5 hours of mental power to do something useful. The remaining things are all only can do supportive work. So that is where I build up this habit of getting up early in the morning. 4:30 to 7:30 is my peak hours. You know, I read a book long time ago. I think your brain at work. Everybody got a sweet spot, 3 to 4 hours. So some people it's early morning, some people we call night owls, right? Only after 10 o'clock they become productive. So that's the core hours where, you know, you'll be productive and the remaining things are all like supportive work. And I think in a knowledge worker segment, this work-life balance, if you need to find a job which you are really passionate about, I think that is the key, rather than looking it other way around, whether I wanted to work for so many hours. Once you find the passion, then it's actually part of your role. You know, like, okay, you do some work, there's something personal, you go, and then, you know, you come back and continue. You need to carry on. Like, you can't turn off. You know, but certain professions, it might work out. For example, a bank employee, right? Where a teller in the cash counter or something. If you ask him to do 14 hours a day, that's a real work. I see a lot of things, you know, like air hostesses, right? You know, it's unfair if you tell them, you know, you work 70 hours a week. It's impossible because that's a real work, physical work, mental work. But you need to understand the context. If you're in this side, no, more like a knowledge and thinking. You can't just turn off and say, okay, I'm turning off 6 o'clock and I'll turn back on by 10 o'clock next day morning. It doesn't work. So it's all about finding your balance and you need to enjoy your life. You know, at the end of the day, why do you want to work, right? You need to have a balance. So don't just look at the headlines, you know, understand the context, because I saw two different arguments. One side in a WhatsApp group, people are blaming this. And then, you know, even somebody said rude word like idiot and those kind of things. But you need to understand the context. If you don't want to do, it's fine. You know, it's up to you. But if you really want to be ambitious and grow faster, you need to put your efforts.
Yeah.
Opportunities won't wait.
Yeah.
You know, you miss the window, it's gone. You know, like now India is in the right place. You know, the talent pool is there. Most of our talent are, you know, 20s and 30s. And if you miss that window, somebody will take it. You know, China capitalized on it, right? Like today they became a superpower and we keep complaining about India and this is not there, that is not there. It's a collective effort. You know, if the mindset switches, then, you know, it's fruitful for everybody in the long run. Yeah.
And I want to come back to a few things that we spoke earlier, right, about people moving from, let's say, India to US. Now, there's another movement which happened a lot, right? In the last 4 years, Bangalore has seen the highest migration ever. That's why the roads are so crowded. Even I blame myself because I'm also a migrant from North India to Bangalore. Do you think this will continue, like people from small cities like Coimbatore and Vizag will keep on coming to Bangalore for?
No, I don't think so. I think it will, Felix, eventually it will slow down because people, everybody, now they understand what are the challenges of moving some to Bangalore. The quality of life, definitely it suffered for everybody, right? Simple things, travel, like even, you know, like I've been caught up in this few times. The Google Maps says 5 kilometers and I thought, it takes one hour, you know, like anywhere, you know, once you step out of the house, you need 45 minutes to 1 hour for you to go from A to B, how, you know, whatever the distance. It's not ideal, you know, like for anything, like most of the time you end up sitting at home and you don't want to step out because at the same time, the tier two cities are developing, you know, Coimbatore, for example, it's a booming, but also I have a concern, like, will it turn into another Bangalore in 10 years? You know, this is where the governments need to step in. They learned from mistakes because Bangalore grown too fast, too quick. You know, like they couldn't react.
It was like Bangalore on steroids.
Yeah, exactly. Everything, it was on steroid, right? Like, all the way from airport to here, like a 1 hour journey, it's full busy, you know, like all big buildings, malls and everything. It's just on steroid. Maybe they should learn and they shouldn't repeat the same mistakes in tier two cities now, because it's a good time to build up that infrastructure and make sure the regulations are there. Because in UK, you know, like, if you're building 1,000, you can't build 1,000 apartments in the first place. You know, it'll be like, if you're building 100 apartments in a road, they will check everything, whether the transport facilities are there, whether in and out traffic is there, how many cars will be there for each apartment, what will be the water supply required for that, and everything is evaluated. But here, I think, in a small road where there's a road room for only a couple of cars, you know, you build like 500 apartments on the other side, it's going to be congested. So I think the government probably need to step in and make sure that it's not repeated. Yeah. In India, if somebody gives me a choice, you have exactly same career prospects and what you can do in one place versus the other. And if, whether you want to take Bangalore or Coimbatore, I will take Coimbatore at current moment because commute is fairly easy, and then even the weather and pollution and everything is good compared to
airport
Bangalore.
There's an airport in Coimbatore.
There is an airport, and the only downside what I see in Coimbatore at the moment is it's the international connection is not there. There are only a couple of flights, one to Singapore and one to Sharjah. It's nowhere, it's a connection, because I will comfortably, I can reach Chennai or Bangalore or even Cochin within 10 hours I can reach, but it will take another 6-7 hours for me to go from Chennai to Coimbatore. That's what will make it really tiring. But I was thinking, you know, if they connect either Coimbatore to Dubai, all the problems will be sorted.
Yeah.
You know, that's only one connection they won't need. Apart from that, yeah, it's good.
I think that will solve a lot of IT problems also. Like how Indian IT cities got created was even Hyderabad and Bangalore, they solved international travel first for these cities.
Correct.
If they solve this for towns like Coimbatore, Vizag, I think a lot of the companies would be happy to move there because of cost structure. And Indian IT operates on the cost arbitrage.
Correct, correct. Yeah, I think, yeah, definitely. I think the international travel is one. I'm a bit surprised with Coimbatore because the Tirupur, which is nearby, it's not an IT, but it's like, you know, like a massive textile hub for the whole world. I'm a bit surprised they don't have a good international connection, because every time when I'm doing that travel from Coimbatore, Chennai to Coimbatore, I will see at least 10, you know, few expats all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
how many SaaS companies today would be in Coimbatore?
Not that many. There are only two known companies. One is us, and the other one is Responsive at a reasonable scale. But a lot of small ones are coming, but notable ones, we don't have that many at the moment. Yeah.
I hope this get changed in the next 10 years, right?
Yeah.
Because I think if you can share what numbers you are at, and then we can talk about the future of Kawai.
Yeah, sure. We are in a $10 to $20 million journey now.
Yeah.
10 is actually a bit old number. It's our 2020 number, but that's a public number. We are in that journey. I think one of the long-term plan is whether we can create a $100 million company by 2030 is what we are looking at. Multi-products and then scale to that level. And I think we are hopeful we will be able to achieve that. And all the focus and directions are in that. Yeah.
And do you also plan to go for IPO?
I won't say we have like a, you know, solid ambitions. We're not looking like, that is a end goal.
Sure.
Because IPO is not really an end goal, right? Because running a public company is a completely different ballgame. People miss an, at least from the normal employee perspective, it might work out well. But a founder perspective, your whole journey starts once you get an IPO, right?
Yeah.
I've seen people like Girish, you know, like, it's not the end game. It's just, you know, that's where you start.
Yeah.
You might get an exit at that point, but, the journey begins. At the, at this moment, you know, like, we are looking only at the revenue prospect.
Milestone.
Revenue milestone, yeah.
But, what I believe is an ecosystem only gets created once as a certain company hits, and Freshworks has demonstrated that, right? Hits the scale of a large public listing. Because a lot of people got financial independence created huge, like it's a number that almost 100 people got into dollar millionaires, right? Which is 8 crore rupees per person across 100 people and more, right? Right. So, and today there are 30 companies that have started out of Freshworks. For, I think 30 companies to start out of Koi, that's what number I'm aiming at.
No, that's true. But I also believe, you know, IPO may not be the only way to distribute wealth. Because we have structures in place and we are also constantly evaluating how to redistribute wealth within the company. Imagine like if you can reach 100 million revenue with 500 employees, right? So then you can distribute the same level of wealth without going IPO as well. So that is how I see it, one way to do it. Because IPO comes with its own challenges as well, right? It's not a straightforward game, right? If distributing wealth is the only thing, you know, I don't think IPO is the only choice.
I think the only challenge with IPO is every time you have a new set of stakeholders, investors, they come with their own different set of expectations. For example, even in the case of startup, right? You take a seed check from a fund like us and you then go to Series A, you have a different set of investors, right? You go to Series B, Series C, right? So there are new kind of, and IPO is the base that exposes you to everybody. Now everybody can, you can have millions of shareholders.
Absolutely.
So now for your company, that might be a 20-year journey to go to IPO. But for these shareholders, it's day zero in your company.
No, exactly. Like, yeah, and I understand, but I think in maybe I'm coming from more like a bootstrapped model. I'm sure like, you know, like, if you're on a 100 million ARR with 500 people, I mentioned somewhere, like, I don't want to, the idea is not to build a large company in terms of headcount.
It's not 5,000 member company.
Exactly. Definitely I don't want that. I always keep telling internally as well, like we are more a tech and we need to focus more on a more efficient company rather than like a headcount. And with that kind of a number, if you can hit big milestones, the wealth can be distributed easily. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Sarna. I would love to keep on talking and talking. Maybe for the next episode, I'll have some more points to discuss with you. But thank you so much. It's been such a wonderful conversation.
Thank you very much, Siddhartha, for having me. It was a really great and it's a good conversation. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thanks.